The Wicked Smart Sports Guys is brought to you by SunIceBatteries.com. As always, the go-to website for all your battery needs. SunIce Batteries carries a full line of super heavy-duty ultra-alkaline lithium and button cell batteries. SunIce Batteries compares in quality to well-known national brands, and the best part, SunIce Batteries are priced much lower than their competitors. Flashlights, remote controls, gaming controls, headphones, digital cameras, hearing aids, smart gloves, whatever device you need a battery for, SunIce has the best batteries at the best price for your device. You can order a 24-pack of AA or AAA heavy-duty batteries for only $5.99, or a 24-pack of ultra-alkaline, ideal for all kinds of gaming and high-tech devices, at just $12.99. Guys, it is Black Friday, it is Cyber Monday, it is that weekend. You probably bought a bunch of junk. You're gonna need batteries for that junk, okay? So head over to SunIceBatteries.com, use coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase BOSTON at checkout, and save 20% off your entire order. Once again, that's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase at checkout, and save big today. SunIceBatteries.com, CELLMAXBatteries.com, the official sponsor of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys podcast. Thanks, as always, to Dolly Dreams for the intro music. This week, we're joined by the host of the What a Horror podcast, one of my favorite guys over at Guy Boston Sports, but don't tell anybody else, okay? It is Colin Cannata, and Colin joining us this week with COVID. Guys, do not worry. We are in separate locations. We are distanced. Colin is recording remotely. I am recording remotely. But Colin, you got the coronavirus. It is. I don't want to mock it too much because it's a serious disease. I really think the NFL has made this whole thing a mockery of this whole thing and putting people making a COVID list and, you know, all this stuff. It desensitizes us to what is a really, really terrible disease. But how are you feeling? You tested positive for it, so I want to get a firsthand account.
Yeah, first and foremost, thanks for having me. And, you know, I think you're right about what the NFL has done to the public's perception of COVID-19. I mean, they've made it almost feel like commonplace where, you know, there's so many positive tests per week. And at the beginning of the season, I feel like we were talking about, are we going to make it through? And now there's all these positive tests, every week. And we've noticed, like we said from the beginning, that the NFL, come hell or high water, is going to play these football games. So it's definitely...
They made a mockery of it. They made a complete mockery of it. And, we hear these guys, Lamar Jackson tested positive. And it seems like nobody cares. It's just like, oh, yeah, Lamar tested positive. Mark Andrews tested positive. Oh, yeah, he has diabetes. So it could... It's like, this is... We're trying not to get the disease. We're like, this is the whole point of why people are at home. So, and the NFL is just letting people get it. And they're like, yeah, whatever, put him on the COVID list. It's awful. But how are you feeling?
I'm doing pretty well. I feel mostly asymptomatic. The one thing actually that I thought was probably a little bit exaggerated, and it certainly isn't, is the loss of smell and taste. My lungs feel fine, no cough, no fevers. I've been keeping tabs on that stuff, but I could not smell anything, even if you put it right up to my face. So that's not the most ideal scenario, but other than that, I can't complain. People have had a lot worse symptoms out there. So I guess, I'm lucky to be healthy coming into my my positive test, and I guess that's allowed me to not be affected too much by it. But, you know, just not a good situation. So, yes, I am reporting live from quarantine to do this podcast.
But you still have your taste, though, right?
I'd say it's about, like, half and half. Like, I can at least tell what I'm eating. But I think because the smell is gone and, you know, smell and taste are connected, it's definitely mitigated. But I tell you, if I put a candle up to my face or, you know, for example, like when I started to notice I didn't have my smell anymore, I put like my cologne, I sprayed it on my hand and tried to smell my hand, and I could not smell anything, like literally nothing. So it's actually crazy. Like I thought it was exaggerated.
That is wild. Is it because your nose is like stuffed up or no?
No, I mean, when I tell you I can breathe clearly through my nose. I haven't been, you know, dealing with a runny nose or a stuffy nose. It's just something with COVID-19 where, you know, your smell sensors, I have no idea the science behind it, but I can breathe just fine. I can inhale through my nose, exhale through my nose, but I have no idea what I'm smelling. So if my eyes were closed, you could put anything in front of me and I would not be able to tell you what it was.
That is wild. That is wild. Because there have been illnesses before. When you say that, people obviously, you know, oh yeah, my nose is stuffed up, I can't smell anything. But to not even have that issue, to just not be able to smell, just lose the sense of smell, that is some spooky stuff. That is really creepy.
Yeah, it's very, that's the word. It's spooky. It's weird. You know, it's something that, you know, you can't really explain, and I can't even comprehend. Like, I've got a candle right in front of me. I'm holding it 2 inches away from my face, and I could not tell you that it was there. It's absolutely unbelievable. But this, you know, this is what we're dealing with. So I've heard of people who haven't gotten their smell back or their taste back for up to a month, 2 months after their positive diagnosis. So I'm just crossing my fingers, hoping it comes back soon.
How many days ago did you test positive, and are you worried it's going to get worse?
No, so I'm on day 7 since my positive test. I tested positive a week ago today. Like I said, still haven't had any fevers. Lungs are fine, no shortness of breath. So I'm thinking if I would have bad symptoms like that, I would already be experiencing them at this point. You know, they tell you to isolate for 10 days from the time of your positive test. Which I was surprised about. Usually I thought it was the 14 days, but I guess 14 days is if you were in contact with someone. Once you yourself test positive, it's 10 days from that date. So my school, I'm in graduate school, they locked me down for 10 days, and then I have to go get my temperature taken, ensure that I don't have any symptoms, and I'm good to go and get back to living my normal life, or, you know, whatever normal is at this point in the world.
Wow, so even though you're still having the smell thing and all that stuff, 3 days from now, as long as you're not, and nothing gets worse, you're just good to go back out in the public and do all your normal stuff again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, from what the doctors told me, there's a time period of when you can and can't be contagious, and that's that 10 days. So 10 days from the positive test, you're good to go. And like I said, there are people who have, you know, tested positive months ago and have had no other symptoms, but still haven't gotten back their taste, smell, whatever it may be for them, you know, personally. So I guess, like I said, it's very odd. It's very annoying, but I could be in much worse situation. There are a lot of people who have had, you know, pretty bad symptoms, or even, you know, worst case scenario, lost their lives because of it. So I'm glad to just not be able to smell as opposed to some of the alternatives.
Yeah. What has the reaction been from some of the people around you? Obviously, we know me. I'm like, interrogating you on the podcast. But what are some of the other people in your life? What have they how have they reacted to?
So I ended up, I believe I got exposed from one of my housemates. So I think that obviously ruled him out from caring, because he was positive before me. Once I found out he was positive, I went and got a test, and I was also positive. My parents were a little bit in shock. I was not able to go home for Thanksgiving, so they, you know, were a little disappointed about that and stuff. But, you know, you're not the only one, I'll tell you that. There have been a lot of people, because, you see all this stuff on Twitter, and you hear about all this stuff literally constantly since March. So I've had a bunch of people who say, you know, I haven't really known anyone that close to me who's actually tested positive, and they want to know what it's actually like. So you're not the first one to be asking me the questions, so don't worry. I don't mind answering the questions. But yeah, I mean, people are definitely curious, and I think people are wondering, you know, what it would be like if they got it themselves, especially people my age, friends, cousins, family members. You know, they're wondering how I'm doing, how I'm feeling, but, you know, everyone's glad to know that, I'm at least doing all right.
All right, well, Colin, wish you the best, but we'll try to talk some Patriots now, get into some actual football, but, you know, obviously hope you get well soon there, Colin. But let's talk about the game this week. I put off Patriots for a few weeks now because, you know, the NBA, everything going on in the NBA has been kind of center of attention, especially over at Guy Boston Sports. Not to brag, but we did just have a pretty good month on Twitter. Just want to throw that out there. One of our best yet. Our best yet. I can say that. It was our best yet. I don't want to go in too much into the numbers. But either way, I've been putting off the Patriots long enough. We have to get back into it. And I figured now was a good time. I skipped over the Ravens game, skipped over the Texans game. I think those went, obviously, the inverse of how we thought each of those two games would go. But this Cardinals game, to me, was really the one it was really the tipping point. You know, because, okay, you went 1-1. I think that's what most people expected over those two games. It wasn't what people wanted after you won the first one, but you go 1-1 there. Now, this Arizona game against an Arizona team that has been really good this season, one of the best offenses in the league, you know, top two or three in the NFL, and Kyler Murray, an MVP candidate. What happens now? Because if you lose this game, I think it would have been safe to say it was pretty much over. And they come out, and I think the defense has their best game of the season, and they pull out the win at the last second. And I think if you look at it, Along with the Ravens game, I guess those two games are kind of neck and neck. Maybe you give the Ravens the slight edge, especially because it was an in-conference game, and that's a team you're going to need to have that tiebreaker over for the playoffs. But this was one of their best games of the season. I think absolutely the defense's best game of the season, because the defense was helped in that Ravens game by the weather. That was not the case in this game, and they deserve a lot of credit for what they were able to do to Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. You know, and Kyler Murray's been so dynamic this season. You know, I obviously had a good rookie season, but you would call him one of the breakout players of the year, most improved players of the year. You know, add in DeAndre Hopkins, and you've got one heck of a team down there in Arizona. And I think most people, you know, thought based on the Patriots' performance the week before against Deshaun Watson, that if they couldn't handle Deshaun Watson and his offense, which, you know, obviously Deshaun Watson's a dynamic player and still a good player and is probably hurt a little bit by roster moves around him and the coaching of Bill O'Brien before he was fired. But I think most people thought, okay, if we just got carved up by Deshaun Watson and the Texans' offense, we don't stand a chance against Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, you know, and the toys that they have. Obviously, Larry Fitzgerald was on the COVID list with yours truly over here. But at the end of the day, you got to give credit where credit's due. The defense really, you know, kind of pulled the rabbit out of their hat and played pretty incredibly. You know, it starts with me. It comes back to that drive at the end of the first half where, you know, you let them move the ball all the way down the field and then, you know, bend but don't break. And I feel like that's not something we've seen much from the Patriots this year. You know, being able to have opportune situational defense, whether it be to get off the field on third down or, you know, hold teams to field goals, or in this case, because there was 3 seconds left in the half on fourth down, you know, end the half without giving up any points after a long drive. So, I mean, you got to give credit to the guys up front. I think played really well. You know, Adam Butler had a great game. Lawrence Guy, solid as always. But then some of the other guys, like, you know, I've been really encouraged by what Kyle Duggar's been doing. Had some more tackles yesterday. He moves around the field well. I mean, there's a lot of things to be positive about if you look at yesterday's game, but now we just got to see if we can have some consistency to it, because like you said, this was by far the best effort of the season by the defense. So you know, hopefully we don't revert to where we were before this Cardinals game.
So, and what you're saying there when you're talking about the Cardinals, DeAndre Hopkins, the Texans, what you're saying is the Texans were right to trade DeAndre Hopkins at the end of this.
Absolutely not. he's still upset about it. Still tweeting about it.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is finally one in the W column for Bill O'Brien. So it's Bill O'Brien 1, DeAndre Hopkins and the Cardinals, what, 150 now by now or something like that? But at least Bill O'Brien got one on the board. You got to give him that. The Texans beat the Patriots and the Cardinals didn't. We have a little bit of breaking news here for us, at least, on the podcast. While we're recording this, Julian Edelman gets placed on the COVID list by the Patriots. So Edelman, already on IR, already questionable to see if he'll even return this season. I know Belichick had some comments on that today saying, I'd never, you know, doubt Julian. It doesn't say whether he's tested positive as far as I can see. Again, this is all information coming in right at the moment, but he was placed on the COVID list, whether that's because he was a close contact or he himself tested positive. I don't know, but that is the breaking news that Edelman, now another victim to fall to this COVID train we're on here.
Yeah, and hopefully, to be honest with you, it's not a close contact situation. If it's a close contact situation, that means, you know, he's been in close contact with someone at the facility who has COVID, and the last thing the Patriots can afford right now. They already, you know, got hit pretty hard by the COVID stuff, and I think we talked about it the last time I was on the podcast with you. This season would be completely different if the Patriots hadn't been hit with COVID the first time and lost their quarterback and, you know, lost the ability to practice at all before the Denver game. I mean, you think about it, the Patriots have one of those wins, you know, just flip one loss, whether it be the Denver game or even, you know, the Kansas City game they could have been in if they had Cam Newton and not Brian Hoyer making mistakes, and then you're a 6-5 team, and now the playoffs look really possible. So, you know, we still have a slight glimmer of hope after beating the Cardinals. So you got to pray that, you know, Julian's been pretty isolated to himself since he's been on injured reserve and, you know, is not going to be passing that along to the rest of the receivers. Because imagine if they lose Jacoby Myers now or, you know, lose some of these guys. So it's bad news, a really tough season for Julian, you know, but he's a fighter. He's a grinder. He's a guy that I, you know, like Bill said today, I have no doubt he'll be back and continue to give the team everything he's got. But talk about getting kicked while you're down, man. It's tough to see for Jules.
Yeah, and you have to imagine, you're right, that it was a positive test on his part because he hasn't been around anybody, right? Like, he isn't, if being on IR,
yeah,
you're not going to, you know, be a close contact of anybody, really. You're not around the team. You're not in the facility. I don't think you're allowed to practice. And I don't think he was practicing by all reports. I don't think you're allowed to practice until, you know, a certain amount of time before you're going to return. So, you know, it's not reported. We don't want to speculate on that. But Edelman probably caught it. And this is just, you know, another one in the long line of what we just talked about off the top of the podcast, just all these NFL players testing positive. And you hope that nothing really comes of this that is too brutal, because I know it's a low chance because they're in very, very good shape. They're all in very good shape, and they're all, you know, at a younger age, the age that it affects the least. But if you're playing with fire, having all these people test positive, because at a certain point, the percentages are going to catch up to you, and someone is going to get in some serious medical issues, have some serious medical issues with this virus. Like, at some point, that's what this is all leading to. And I just hope, you know, I hope it's not Edelman. I hope it doesn't happen with anybody. But that's what you're talking about, is eventually that the virus is going to catch up with you if you keep toying with it like this.
Yeah, and I know we talked about this in the last podcast where we were talking about the COVID situation starting to become a disaster. And I know it's an example that a lot of people around here keep using, but look, I'll use it again. Look at what happened to Eduardo Rodriguez. Like, what's going to happen if that happens to a few NFL players and then they're, you know, completely wiped out for the season and can't play for the rest of the season? Then what's the NFL going to do? They can't just keep, you know, shrugging their shoulders and saying, you know, we're going to try to keep it under control and play as many games as we can. Well, you know, once people start having, you know, more long-term health issues arise from it, you know, I think it'll only take one, and especially if it's a big name, like, I don't know, but, you know, and, you know, simultaneously, while the Edelman news breaks, the NFL has pushed the Steelers and Ravens game another day. So now that game will be on.
You are kidding.
That game will be on Wednesday, according to you know, some of the big NFL reporters out there. So yeah. I mean, it's getting uglier and uglier. That's for sure. You saw what happened with the Broncos. You saw you know, several more teams adding players to the COVID list, and now you've got this game that's being postponed another day till Wednesday. Not to mention the game wasn't even, you know, was supposed to be on Thursday. It wasn't even a Sunday game in the first place, and now it's going to be played, you know, 6 days later if they're able to squeeze it in on Wednesday. So it's an absolute disaster. There's no doubt about it.
And look, we have our fun at the expense of some of these things, right? We joke around about the Broncos thing with you know, Kevin, what was his name? I even forgot it now. Kevin Harlan, Kevin Hamlin, I'm obviously joking. What was his name?
Kendall Hinton.
Hinton. we joke around that he's the starter for them. But if we can be, and I'm not saying don't joke about it. You know, joke around, have fun, be all by all means. The world is ending. But, you know, find whatever solace, take whatever solace you can, and joke around about, you know, Kendall Hinton being so terrible, and try to enjoy some things. But if we can just take a minute to be honest about the situation for a second. What's going on in the NFL this year is an absolute disgrace. For a team to be forced to play with a practice squad wide receiver at their quarterback, at that point, it should be obvious and evident to everyone that this should not be happening. This is not a situation that a team should be forced into because you want to play football. And I understand it's no season or this. At that point, you have to realize that no season is better than this, than pushing Steelers Ravens back 6 days. And it really, I mean, we talked about this. You just mentioned it, and you didn't say it in so many words. And I don't know if we said it in so many words the last time. But at this point, it is very clear that the only thing that is going to stop the NFL from moving forward with the season is if somebody dies. If somebody dies from this virus. And remind me of the situation. I'm just throwing this out there. I'm not saying anything. This is just a question that I'm asking because it just came to mind. What did that Cowboys coach who passed away, the Cowboys positional coach who passed away, what did he pass away from this week? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I saw he passed and that the cause of death was not out as of the day it happened, and then I never actually followed up and looked it up, so I'm not sure. Do you have the answer to that question?
They said it was some sort of medical emergency. I'm pretty sure it wasn't COVID-related. Okay, I'm fairly certain it wasn't COVID-related. I think it might have been you know, a heart incident or something. I can't.
Yeah, because it sounded like it was something. It sounded like it was something that was sudden and unexpected. You know what I mean?
But
and to be in the facility as a coach, you would think you're getting tested every single day, so you would have known you had COVID. So I would think it's safe to say that it wasn't COVID related, but I guess who knows?
Yeah, I don't want to speculate on that because that's. But even still, I mean, it's just insane what the NFL is trying to move forward with this season. It is disgraceful, and I think we'll look back on the season in shame and say this wasn't worth it. I don't know who's going to win the Super Bowl and what else is going to happen, but this is just crazy, that all this stuff with now Edelman's testing positive too, and that just adds another layer to it. But it's, or supposedly, you know, who knows with Edelman, like you said, but you don't know for sure. But it's,
and dare I ask, what happens? You know, we obviously, it seems they're going to keep pushing through because this was the week. If there was going to be a week where it shut down, this was the week where it was going to get shut down. You know, the Niners can't even play at home anymore because the county's not allowing contacts. Like the Broncos thing, everything has gone wrong this week. If there was a week for it to shut down, it would be now. But dare I ask, what happens if you get all the way to the playoffs and you've got some marquee matchup? We'll say the Ravens and the Chiefs. The Ravens is a wild card. Go play the Chiefs. And Patrick Mahomes tests positive for COVID, or any other situation, Tom Brady tests positive for COVID, wild card weekend. How is that going to look? You know, like you're in the playoffs and you push through this whole season, and then you're going to have what, Blaine Gabbert playing quarterback or Chad Henne playing quarterback? Like, what kind of ratings is that going to do? You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like
not just the ratings, Colin, but you're absolutely right. These teams. It's going to become even more of a mockery. It's going to be a joke. I mean, you have the, if you have the Buccaneers and the Chiefs in the playoffs, and who's it? Is it still Matt Moore? Matt Moore's quarterback, and it's great. Like, great. We're watching, and it's one thing if that happens because of injury, right? You remember years back,
yeah.
You know, the Cardinals lost, what was it, Carson Palmer. They had to play Brent Hundley, or whoever, no, brought up Brent Hundley. Who was it? Chase, some, I don't know what the guy's name was, but some terrible quarterback, Ryan Lindley, right? It was Ryan Lindley.
Yep.
And they had to start him. And it was awful. It was terrible. It was a terrible game. But it was one thing. You know, there's not a lot you can do because of injury. The COVID situation, it's like, I don't know how many quarterbacks we're going to have that's going to happen to, but the cases keep rising. So you're absolutely right. We're going to get to a point where one of these teams is not going to be at full strength come playoff time. And, I mean, that's when, by the way, you really start talking about asterisks. Because we talked about asterisks with these NBA championships and the NHL championships, those teams were mostly fully loaded. Like, if the NFL's playing and the Chiefs don't have Mahomes, or, you know, pick another one, the Titans don't have Derrick Henry, or the Bills don't have Josh Allen, or whoever, right? Then all of a sudden, that's when you start labeling championships as fake.
Yeah, and I mean, I just said, dare I say, what it, you know, if it happens in the playoffs. What happens? Like, this is obviously the doomsday scenario, but it's 2020, so you can.
Colin, wait. Let me stop you. Let me stop you, because I know what you're. Everybody knows what you're gonna say already, and I know what you're gonna say. If it happens in the Super Bowl, they will cover it up. There is no way they're going to let that happen in the Super Bowl. They're gonna play the Super Bowl with everybody. There is no way they're gonna allow the Super Bowl to be played with a backup quarterback. I'm sorry, it's not happening. If it happened, there would be a massive cover-up, and it would be a huge scandal if anybody ever found out about it. But they are not letting that game be played without both teams at full strength. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, I mean, you read my mind. And would it be a cover-up? Would it be we push the game back another 2 weeks?
Oh,
I mean,
goodness.
Like, what would you do if that happened? Because nobody wants to play a Super Bowl where you don't have full strength. Like, we'll just assume. Say it's the Chiefs and the Saints. We'll call it that, or something like that. If it's Mahomes or Breeze isn't there, like I know the Saints have a decent backup in Taysom, but like you're not playing the Super Bowl unless it's a normal injury. That's just fate. That's the way football works. But they're not going to let COVID knock a starting quarterback out of the Super Bowl. I don't see how they can let that happen, because then they'll be laughed at for years as this was the phoniest championship of all time.
Well, look, at that point, the NFL will probably figure out some sort of bubble situation, right? I mean, the Super Bowl's already played on a neutral site, so that's not really a factor in that decision. I would have to assume you're going to figure out something with a bubble. Even then, doesn't stop guys from testing positive. It's not a guarantee. So, you know, still one of those guys can test positive. I'm telling you, the NFL would try to cover it up. There's no way around that. But look, we've spent a lot of time on this. We were supposed to talk Patriots today. I had all this stuff, Cam Newton, Jacoby Myers, and it's just all this stuff has blown up with what we're on the call with. First of all, me finding out Colin had COVID. I didn't even know that before we actually got on the call and talked about it, and I wanted to start off with that. And then while we're on the call, Ravens Steelers gets pushed back another day, and Edelman gets put on the COVID list, and it's all this crazy stuff. I guess let's try to fit some of this stuff in. We've aired our grievances with the NFL many times. I have on numerous occasions across multiple different platforms. But, I think it's well documented by now. We think what the NFL is doing is wrong. And I can't speak for you. If they canceled the season today, I think it would be... I would support it. I think that I would be a little upset. I would, miss football. But I think that would be the right decision, and if anything, I would think it is stupid that they didn't do it sooner.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I'm in the same boat. I'd definitely be disappointed. Despite all the bad circumstances, I've still enjoyed being able to feel a little bit normal on Sundays and turn on Red Zone or turn on the Patriots game. But at some point, you got to do what's right and what's healthy for these people, because these people have families and lives outside of football. But yeah, I don't see it happening, but I guess We'll see what happens moving forward. And I will say this to kind of close out the COVID thing. If the Patriots were going to have a bad season, at least it's this season that was bad all around anyways. You know what I mean? You might as well get your crap season out of the way. Take your cap space this offseason. Hopefully we got a vaccine and come back stronger next year. So if there was any year for a bad season, it's this year, because, it's a disaster anyways.
Okay. So the Patriots defense, Adam Butler played really well. I think it was, I think everybody would say it was the best game Adam Butler ever played. There were a couple plays where, I'm just going to say it, he looked like Aaron Donald on a couple of plays there. Obviously he's not. I'm not saying he's Aaron Donald. I'm not even willing to say he's a very good defender yet. But a couple of plays there, he looked spectacular. And it was the first time where I really looked at Adam Butler and said, this can be... a piece on your defense that at least you can feel good about, and say, Adam Butler's can be here for a long time. He can be a starter for a long time. Because I always had questions about Adam Butler. Everybody always really loved him. He was talked up a lot, in practice and stuff like that. But I feel like this was the first real time. We've seen, he's made plays before, but this is the first time for a full game you said, wow, he did a lot. I mean, and I know it was Lawrence Guy mostly on that goal line stand, but obviously he's in there too. And the batted ball at the line that turned into the Adrian Phillips pick, and the sack he had on Kyler Murray where he powered through two offensive linemen. Like, this was a really, really impressive showing from him.
Yeah, and I think, I've always been high on Adam Butler's motor. Like, he seems like he's a player who works really hard out there, and he's given everything he can give on every single play. But I think now you're starting to see, some talent and some skill, and, he's refined his craft a little bit, and you add that together with the motor, and I think you've got a really effective defensive player. And I do think he's a guy, who Belichick will make sure stays around for the next several years. So it's good to see, because the front seven is definitely a bit of a concern for the Patriots. But, if you keep him around and you can find a way to keep Lawrence Guy around for a couple years, and Cowart's not a bad player, you've got some pieces there on the defensive line. And, then you're just going to start addressing the linebacking core. But yeah, I like Adam Butler, and I think he deserves the credit that he's getting after yesterday's game. But I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves,
The Aaron Donald stuff, I know. I'm not saying he's Aaron Donald. I'm just saying he looked really good. But the Patriots defense, it was the best game they played, I think. Kyler Murray, like I said, he was an MVP candidate. He had zero touchdowns this game. Coming into this game, he had at least two touchdowns, rushing and passing, combine them however you want. But he had multiple touchdowns in every other game this season. Zero today. And I know, Drake ran a few in, so he that could have easily switched up. They could have threw him in with Murray, whatever. But that's the fact is they really kept Murray in check. And they kept the Cardinals' offense in check, holding them, to 17 points, which was their lowest output of the season. So you give them a lot of credit. The Cardinals took some risks. They obviously, went for that fourth down, didn't get it. Zane Gonzalez missed a kick. That was factored in too. But even then, let's say you give them two field goals there because, instead of on fourth down deciding to go for it, you decide, we're just going to kick the field goal and take the 3 points. And let's say Zane Gonzalez made that kick that he missed anyway, all right? Let's give the Cardinals a couple of, you know, extra points for stuff the Patriots didn't necessarily factor into. You know, I'm going to be nice. I'm, you know, nice to the Cardinals. That's still one of the Cardinals' lowest scoring games of the season. It's not quite that lowest. They've scored 21 a couple of times, but that is down there for the Cardinals' offense. So, I mean, the Patriots' defense has been a disappointment all season. I think, you know, we assumed the offense would be bad or mediocre. We thought that the defense would be what carried this team, and if they could be the best unit in the league like they were last year, then they would win a lot of games, and that they haven't been that. I think this is the first time this season where I've looked at them and said they really won this game, and they looked like the team, the defense they were last year.
Yeah, and you know, football is all about momentum, and the defense was able to, you know, give the team as a whole, I guess the offense, some momentum. I mean, the like I said earlier in the show, the stand at the goal line, you know, that it's a completely different game if the Cardinals get in the end zone there. I believe it would have been 17-7 at the time. Yeah, it would have been 17-7 had they scored there. And, you know, the offense probably not good enough to overcome a 17-7 deficit. But, you know, then they were able to, you know, play the ball control game, tie the game up, go ahead by 7 points. So, yeah, if the defense can continue to play like this, that's the only way that there is any hope left for this season. Because I think we've seen, you know, the offense will have their good days and their bad days, but they're certainly not the type of offense that's going to carry a team to countless victories.
And what do you think of the performance from DeAndre Hopkins, the battle with him and Gilmore? Because coming into that, that was obviously a pretty big storyline. Those guys don't, well, I don't know if I want to say they don't seem to like each other, but there's a competitive spirit between those two. And, it, you know, Hopkins was mostly held in check, I would say. I mean, Gilmore got a few penalties there on him, which is what makes me kind of want to give Hopkins a little bit more leeway. But 5 catches, 55 yards. Obviously draws a few penalties there down at the end if you want to add those onto it. But I know at least one of those was against a linebacker in zone. I remember that play specifically. I don't know about the rest of his catches. At least I know at least a number of them are on Gilmore. But, I mean, Gilmore, you got to give him credit. He did pretty well against Hopkins, all things considered. I don't know if I quite give him the W, but it's at least a Mike Tyson, you know.
Roy Jones.
Right, yeah. It's at least a Mike Tyson, Roy Jones draw where, you know, Tyson kind of got the best of him. And I think Gilmore, rather, kind of got the best of Hopkins in this one.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look back at DeAndre Hopkins' game logs of this season, you know, 5 for 55 is, like, extremely modest. Like, there are certain players at the same position that 5 for 55 would be a good day. You know, look at a N'Keal Harry. If N'Keal Harry had 5 for 55, I think people would be rejoicing on Twitter. When DeAndre Hopkins has 5 for 55, that's a pretty weak day for him. So you got to appreciate what Gilmore did, and you know, I think he gets a little bit more excited for games against players like that where they have that kind of mutual respect, but a little bit, you know, a little bit of talk going on between them, especially last year and things like that. So I would say Gilmore gets the victory, but you know, DeAndre Hopkins is as good as it gets. So if we can stop DeAndre Hopkins, you better stop everyone else for the rest of the season.
Yeah. So let's move on a little bit to some other stuff. It's just so much of this podcast got taken over by COVID. I don't know what we have time for. But we'll talk about Cam Newton here for a second, because I will say, as far as Cam goes, this was the game where I really gave up on Cam. You know, before this game, I still was giving a little bit of leeway, like, well, you know, he's still new to the offense, and he is coming off COVID, and he still doesn't have the best weapons. But, you know, he seems to have developed a rhythm with Damir Bird and Jacoby Myers. So the weapons aren't much better, but he at least has chemistry with a few guys there. And you've had enough time in the offense, and you're far enough away from having COVID, and it's like, that stuff doesn't hold up to me anymore. You're not having the same excuses. And that second interception was just bad. And as soon as he threw that, I said, you know what? I was willing to kind of consider bringing Cam Newton back for next season if you had no other options, if you didn't have a rookie you liked. I mean, you know from last year, I'm all in on drafting a rookie, throwing him to the Wolves, seeing if he can play. And if he doesn't, a year later, draft someone else. You know, the Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray theory. Okay? But Cam, I was willing to give him a little bit of glimmer of hope. You know what? Maybe, you know, he comes back next season if Bill really doesn't like any of the quarterbacks in this draft, and he's still this talented guy, and he can do a little bit. That second interception, I said, oh my goodness. I can't do it with Cam Newton anymore. He's just, He's not good enough. He's just not. And even though they won, even though they still won, I'm officially off the Cam Newton train. I'm not. And by the way, somebody mistook this for me saying I want them to start Jared Stidham. That is not what I'm saying. I still think I want them to stick it out with Cam Newton because I don't want them to tank. But as far as when this season comes to an end, Newton, they can move on from Newton. I'm okay. I'm done with that.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know if you're going to find a better option because I certainly don't think a better option is Jared Stidham.
I'm not saying I don't think there are better options out there than Cam Newton. But at the end of the day, I would rather a rookie that can't play than Cam Newton because I think there's a bar to me. There's a line of, okay, this guy's good enough that I shouldn't just throw it to a rookie. Cam Newton doesn't cross that bar. He's not good enough, and that's what I've seen this season.
Well, if I was Bill Belichick, KJ, here's what I would say. Well, why don't we remember that he threw for 350 yards last week, which I found to be an interesting comment from Belichick. I'm not used to him completely going out of his way to defend his quarterback. Obviously, you know, him and Tom had a bit of a love-hate relationship towards the end of, their tenure together. But it seems a little bit weird. Usually, you know, Coach Belichick will just say, we got to work on things. We got to get better. And when asked about Cam Newton's kind of poor performance throwing the ball, that's what Coach Belichick said. He had 350 yards last week. So it's almost like some type of vote of confidence from Coach Belichick. So I don't really know how I feel about Cam Newton. If it's going to be the Cam Newton we saw yesterday, it's better. You're better off going really with anybody else who has a chance to develop and, you know, get their feet wet in the NFL instead of a guy who you kind of at this point know what he's going to be at this, you know, at this stage of his career. But I don't, it's tough because I know this is another conversation. I won't get too deep into it. But the more games you win and the more, middle of the pack you stay, it's going to be more difficult to go actually get a quarterback that you might feel comfortable putting in there in his first season without a year or two to develop. So I don't know. I still think there is a possibility. They seem to have a good relationship between Cam Newton and McDaniels and Cam Newton and Coach Belichick. I still think there is a slight possibility that Cam Newton is brought back on a one-year deal. No one's going to break the bank to bring him in, from another team standpoint. So, maybe you bring back Cam Newton for 1 year and you see if you can get somebody in the draft that you feel good about. I'm not going to say that I would feel great about that option, but, we're finding out what it's like to be a normal NFL team who has to struggle to find a franchise quarterback or a quarterback moving forward.
Well, here's the thing, Colin, is that I think the reason we're hearing Bill Belichick talk up Cam Newton is because he knows he needs to do that. With Tom Brady, you didn't need to talk up Tom Brady. Tom Brady knew how great he was. You needed to motivate Tom Brady. You needed to make him angry. That's when Tom Brady was at his best. Cam Newton... Mm-hmm. I don't want to be mean to the guy, but he is a sad sack right now. I mean, he has some moments where he really is down on himself. Like, you've heard his quotes like, I suck, it's on me, like, I was awful today. It's like, he's a guy you need to pick up. You need to lift him up. Brady's a guy you need to push so he pushes back. And I just think that it's what we're hearing from Belichick is less about Kim actually liking Cam Newton and him trying to, lift the spirits of a guy who really is kind of down on himself right now. I mean, look, I just think that they're different types of players and you have to treat each one differently. And that's why we're seeing Belichick treat Newton that way. I mean, I hate to rag on Cam Newton like this and act like he's some, loser. But that is kind of what I think this is about.
Yeah, it's honestly... Yeah, that just made me laugh. I think it's a very good point. And I think back to the borderline tears on the sideline after he fumbled against Buffalo.
Yeah,
and
I mean, even just like stuff like that. It's like, come on.
Even just the look on his face against Denver. It's unbelievable. And even yesterday, they won the game. And Cam Newton, I think he went up to McDaniels after the game and said, I'm sorry, man. Like, he knew he was terrible. And he was still down in the dumps even after, having the run that got them in position to win. So I actually don't disagree with that point at all. And I didn't think of it myself. So I give you credit for coming up with that. I think at least Coach Belichick likes Cam. We can say this. I think he likes Cam Newton, the person and the competitor, more than more than people thought. Like, you know, people thought it was going to be a disaster. People thought Cam was going to be a problem. And I think Cam, he's, you know, he takes accountability. He's clearly trying his best. Obviously, his best is not that great right now. But, I mean, Cam Newton's given everything he can to the football team. He's trying to be a leader. He's trying to connect with these younger guys and make a relationship with the guys on offense that Tom Brady never made an effort to get close with. But yeah, I think you could be right about that, that maybe, you know, Coach Belichick's just doing his best to try to keep Cam's spirits high, you know, moving forward, just to see if they can win some more football games moving forward. But it's going to be a very interesting offseason, because I've heard people speculate both ways. Heck, I heard Tommy Curran about a month ago say, I think there's a good chance they bring him back in another 1 year deal and kind of see what happens. And then as of today, a couple hours ago, he said it's, you know, it's a one and done with Cam Newton. We've seen enough to know that he's not a capable passer, and, you know, just being able to run the ball is not going to be enough to get another contract from the Patriots. So I've heard it both ways. It'll be interesting to find out what they feel like, you know, in the building at Gillette Stadium. But there's, you know, still what, 5-6 games to, you know, see where he's at for good.
Yeah,
I guess.
And I think you make a good point there when you say, because I originally disagreed with you, but when you say, people, Belichick clearly likes Newton more than people thought he was going to. That absolutely, because he definitely, people coming into it thought their personalities were going to match. He definitely likes him more than that. But I don't know that, I don't really buy it. I think it is more of a motivational tool than anything. I don't know that it's 100% that he enjoys having Cam Newton as his quarterback so much. But I guess we'll see, you know, and what happens and if he decides to re-sign him. I just think it's more of an act than anything. But as far as one more thing about the offense is Jacoby Myers, because I don't think we've had a chance to talk about him, but he has really stepped up here recently and become, you know, one of the key pieces to this offense. And for the last 5 games now, he has 5+ receptions, and, you know, no one's been doing that around here other than Julian Edelman, who didn't even do it this year. He hadn't done that since last year, at the end of last season. So Jacoby Myers is really stringing together a few really solid games here, and I mentioned him just earlier when I talked about, you know, Newton having some weapons. And I think, honestly, if you look at the entire offense besides the offensive line, there's only 2 guys I really feel good about, and 2 guys that I would say I 100% want those guys back for next year, and that's Jacoby Myers and Damian Harris.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that statement at all. I would maybe just, if you, you know, had some better receivers, you didn't have to be your number 2 option, I would maybe throw Damir Bird into that category. I think he at least has some potential to be a number 3 or 4 receiver and a guy that's at least a good depth piece. But Jacoby Myers has had quite the roller coaster of a Patriots career. From training camp darling and preseason, you know, everybody was hyping him up his rookie year after being an undrafted free agent and saying, man, this guy could really come in and make an impact. And then you kind of, you know, you saw him have, I guess, some, I guess, mental mistakes. I don't really know how else to put it, where, you know, you could tell Brady was getting frustrated with him during his rookie season, where maybe one, you know, plays broke down and one play should have gone the opposite direction than he did, or he miscommunicated with Brady a little bit. They weren't on the same page, whatever. And he kind of fell out of favor. And I think people kind of started to forget about him. And at the beginning of this year, it was like he was an afterthought. You know, he fought in training camp. People thought maybe there was a chance he wouldn't even make the team. And then you had some opt-outs, some injuries, whatever. He ended up making the team. And for the first several weeks, he wasn't really a part of any of their offensive plans. And then you see him start to emerge. And I think everybody collectively as a Patriots fan was scratching their head kind of like, wait, why were we not playing this guy? Like, this, we could have, you know, there's no way we could have thought what we had out there was worse than what this guy's brought to the table. I mean, he runs decent routes. He finds ways to get open. And, you know, really since that Buffalo game, he's emerged and, you know, had a 12-catch game against the Jets for 170 yards. I mean, he's good enough to be playing on our team, that's for sure, because there aren't any better options. So I think he's definitely a guy moving forward, and I think he could be a solid number 2 receiver in our offense if you know, had a guy at number 1 who is a little bit, you know, better than what we've had. So I don't know. You know, I feel decent about him and Edelman and maybe trying to bring in another piece this offseason, but He's had an interesting Patriots tenure, that's for sure. It's been a little bit of up and down, but his stock is as high as it's ever been right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I jumped right on that Jacoby Myers train when he was good in preseason. I was a full believer, and some people wanted to say, oh, this is Austin Carr all over again and all this stuff. It looked real. Like, when you saw what he was doing to some defensive backs and the routes he was running, like, he was really messing some guys up with his footwork. And I think you're right. I don't know why it took so long for the Patriots to come to the realization that he should be playing, but I'm glad they finally are putting him out there, and hopefully he can continue to produce because he's been playing really, really well. And as far as the number one, number two stuff, it's weird with their offense, but he can at least be, you know, a key piece to it moving forward. I don't know what capacity that means. If you want to say number one, number two receiver, whatever it may be. I don't know if he can be the next Edelman or the next, at least, you know, good, solid slot receiver, 100-catch guy. I don't know. I'm not going to totally rule it out because we've seen guys of, you know, similar talent level, similarly coming out of nowhere at least, have those big seasons. I know that, you know, one that I would just throw out there to you is like a Jamison Crowder who, you know, maybe a little bit faster, doesn't quite profile like Jacoby Myers, but a guy that kind of came out of nowhere, you know, fourth round pick, so a little bit higher pedigree, but, you know, had a few good seasons, few really good seasons with Washington, and then comes over to New York and he's one of their best receivers. Like, I would say I would be hopeful that Myers can turn into a guy like that for the Patriots. And if that's what you get out of Myers, you should be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, and, you know, so I just did a little quick math in my head, and over the last six games, Jacoby Myers has had 35 catches. So 35 catches in six games, if you average that out, you know, to a full season, he could be close to a 90, 100 guy. You know, maybe a little bit lower, but that's not bad, especially when you look at our receiving core. You're going to take a guy who can give you that type of production any day of the week. And, you know, he, like I said, if you keep getting open and you keep consistently catching the ball, you have a spot on my team, in my opinion. So, you know, I think you can pencil him in as a big part of the offense, obviously, for the rest of this season, going into next season. And, you know, you see what type of pieces you can bring in around him. But if you can have Jacoby Myers be a Jamison Crowder, I would certainly take that. Jamison Crowder is a pretty darn good player. He's just on the worst team in football with some of the worst quarterback play in football.
Yeah, and that'd be 93 catches over the course of a 16-game season, by the way, if you average out your little numbers there. Some more breaking news across the NFL. I just want to throw it out there for fantasy managers everywhere. Will Fuller tests positive for PED. He was suspended six games. So, you know, he was having a great season. If you're the Packers, you know, did the Packers dodge a bullet by not trading for that guy, because all of a sudden he's going to miss pretty much the remainder of the NFL season. I think exactly the remainder of the NFL season, at least as far as the Texans are concerned. I don't know if he would, if, you know, that suspension would stretch into the playoffs if, you know, if he was on the Packers or how that would work. But nevertheless, you know, I think it's just a ridiculous situation. A guy that couldn't even stay healthy to begin with, and now, you know, he's having this great season, finally staying healthy, and he's out with PED. So another crazy thing, just a note I want to throw in there, because, you know, fantasy managers out there listening will probably be kind of upset about that. But real quick, before we end the show, I do want your thoughts on some quick NFL notes. Whether it is that, we're not going to have time to do a full-fledged kind of segment on this. But if you want to touch on Will Fuller, go for it. But the other thing I wanted to bring up, I'll just ask you it. We're going to do a full segment about this. We don't have time, so I'm just going to ask you the question out of nowhere. What is a better chance of happening? The Jets going winless or the Steelers going undefeated?
Oh, I think the better chance is got to be the Jets going winless, because I think they want to. You look at the Jaguars, who have one win right now. And if... So I looked this up and I Googled it because I was curious. If they had the same record, the number one pick would go to Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence would be a Jaguar. It's based on strength of schedule, but the...
Well, Colin, let me cut you off for just a second here, because like I said, we don't have a lot of time. But I don't disagree that the Jets ownership, maybe even the Jets coaching staff, who knows? It's possible all those people want to be winless. But the players... probably don't, because they want to try hard. They want to, you know, get their next contract. And specifically, more specifically, do you think their quarterback, Sam Darnold, wants to go win this right now? And by the way, I just thought of this while I was bringing it up. The answer might be yes. Maybe Sam Darnold wants to go win this, to have them get Trevor Lawrence and have someone else trade for him. So Maybe that's a bad thing for me to throw out there. But if you're Sam Darnold, who knows if there's another job waiting for you in the NFL? So do you really want to throw away these next string of games and lose your starting job to another player and potentially not get another one anytime soon and turn into, hey, I don't know, Josh Rosen?
Yeah, you're right, because you know, everyone said, oh, Josh Rosen will probably find another gig, and he never did and probably never will. So yeah, it's not a bad point. I just think it comes down to this question, and I'll leave it at this, is do you, like, what do you value more? Do you value getting Trevor Lawrence more or getting one win so you don't have to be, you know, grouped in with the Lions who went 0-16? Like, that, I think the most ideal scenario is the Jaguars win one more game so you can try and fight like heck to get one win, still have the number one pick, get Trevor Lawrence, and move on, maybe with some hope for your franchise. But I don't know, man. I think at this point, if you're the Jets, you got to do whatever it takes to get Trevor Lawrence in that door.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. What do you think the chances are of the Steelers going undefeated? Because I think they're looking better by the day. I mean, they should easily win this Ravens game if it even happens. You know, who knows at this point? It's just ridiculous. But outside of that, I'm just going to pull up their schedule, and I have looked at it already, but I just want to double check so I can see the games in front of me. They have Washington next week. That's a very winnable game. Even though Washington, by NFC East standards, I guess is playing some good football right now. I don't know if I can define it that way, but you have Washington, you have the Bengals on there. I mean, you have some tough games with the Bills, the Colts, and the Browns. But it's not like you have the Chiefs on there anywhere. Like, those games should still all be winnable. The Browns, by the way, they've been good. But the last time the Steelers played them, they won 38-7. And the Browns have won a lot of close games. So a little bit of what the Browns are doing is smoke and mirrors. I'm just going to throw that out there. Like, I feel like all those games the Steelers should win. And the only one I'm saying, even the Colts, like, with Phillip Rivers, like, I don't think the Colts are going to be able to score enough points against the Steelers to win that game. The only game I could maybe see them losing is maybe the Bills game. Other than that, I think they could go undefeated here. It could really happen.
Yeah, you're right. You know, those teams you just mentioned, the only ones I think where it's even a possibility would be the Bills and the Colts, and I don't find it likely in either scenario. I guess the only interesting thing is, you know, do they do what I remember, speaking of the Colts, they did years ago, where they were, you know, closing in on potentially being undefeated, and they ended up sitting guys and valuing playoff health and whatnot over the undefeated record. Because you do play the Browns the last week of the season. If it's a scenario where the Browns are, you know, fighting for seeding as a wild card or whatever it may be, and the Steelers have already locked up their fate as the number one seed in the AFC. But, I mean, who knows? With the Chiefs only, you know, with one loss and one game behind you, you would think that the Steelers would probably be trying to win every game down the stretch. So, when you put it that way, KJ, it's actually pretty possible that we could have an undefeated Steelers team. It's definitely not, you know, not as difficult as some paths that they could have, like you said, if they played the Chiefs or a team like that.
And with a team like the Steelers that cares about history, and a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger who, maybe it's one of his last runs, you know, he's nearing the end. And a coach like Mike Tomlin, who's like very competitive, very rah-rah, like, see, it seems like all of those things would combine to make them really, really want to go undefeated. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see if they chase it. I'm going to predict it right now. I think they go 16-0. And I think they lose in the playoffs before the Super Bowl. So
could we have a 16-0 and an 0-16 team the same season? That would actually be quite something.
That, you know, why not? It's 2020, so
it's 2020.
It would make sense. All right, Colin, thank you for coming on, battling through coronavirus to come on the show. That's some impressive stuff, Colin. Hope you continue to feel well. And you know, it doesn't you don't get any symptoms in the next 3 days, and you're cleared by the doctors to resume football activities. We'll see you back on the field. You know, Colin, really, really, we do hope you feel better and or continue to feel good. I guess it's, you know, we hope you get your sense of smell back. How's that?
Yeah, that's really all I'm worried about at this point. And, you know, you said it. I came out here and I grinded. I gave my best performance, a nice 50-minute show plus. You know, that the lungs are still feeling good. And if that display right there, the last 50 minutes, wasn't enough for you to believe me, then I don't know what will. So I appreciate you having me on, KJ, and I appreciate the well wishes, man.
I don't think this makes me a close contact, so I should not be ending up on the COVID list as far as I'm aware. But thanks, Colin. Thank you guys for listening. You can follow Colin on Twitter at KanataColin. Follow me on Twitter at ByKJO. Follow the pod on Twitter at The Smart Project. Everything over at Guy Boston Sports. And we'll see you guys next week.